the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
So, okay, where do you want to start here? Lots of clown world this week, I'm sure, as always.
Well, yeah, you know what? Let's talk about initially the signs of a healthy economy, and we can look at so many things that make up a healthy economy. One thing that to me doesn't show that is the stoppage of short sells. And you know, you look at what happened, and I'm talking about China for in this particular case. This is a pretty big story in my opinion, because something's going on in China that I don't know what the fuck's. Can't get much information out of there, but what we can see, something's up. And it's not like this is unheard of, because in 2008, in the United States, for instance, they stopped short selling for a temporary period of time, for 2 weeks, because, you know, the financial crisis, they wanted to ensure nobody capitalized on it and made it even worse. But
heaven forbid.
That's capitalism. They can stop it one way, but not the other. And they did that to protect the system for stability. But anyways, China's largest brokerage, and this is a state-owned CITIC Securities Company, I think I pronounced it right, but they suspended short sellings, and they gave no official reason, but I can guess we can see what's up. You know, they're trying to protect and stabilize their financial system. And, they, you know, they're trying to do this to boost the stock market over there, but still, it's fucking hemorrhaging. Today, we had another bad day in China, in the Chinese market. And which, by the way, if you look at the past 9 weeks, 8 of them have been red. 8 red out of past 9. That is a trend that things are going real. So they have some real challenges moving forward, right? Like
real challenges. Yeah, that's one way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't care how you slice this, because their economy is slowing.
Yeah.
You know, remember it used to be double digits growth for the GDP. Now we're getting somewhere in the range between 3% and 5%, depending on what sources you pick up. And so that's a huge drop in just a few short years. And there's also the real estate crisis going on over there. And this used to represent a significant portion of the economy, but it's been a prolonged slump over there. And they have rising debts that are just pathetic debts, in fact. And financial instability is just resulted as a result from all this. But, and you can throw in a demographics problem. They got an aging population, then they're going to consume less, produce less, and so forth. So I'm looking at this. China, something's up there. And this is something that's going to really fuck up Western economies, because I guess we rely on them significantly to provide us cheap goods. But in this flip side, it could be also a huge opportunity for Western nations as well. We still have industry set up over here. Is there an appetite to move the industry from China and other parts of that part of the world to here? Sure, it would be very costly, but long term, it would be much more beneficial to have it set up here. So I know there'll be some risk to start considering moving some of the industry over here, but something's going on in China, and we should take advantage if at all possible. How we're going to do this, I don't know, but it's something we should look at much more seriously.
Yeah, I don't have much to say because I don't know the ins and outs of the plumbing there, but you know, did they ever really get back on stable footing since the Evergrande thing in 2021?
I think COVID was the thing that really killed them.
Well, I mean, whatever the case is, right? Like they've not been on stable footing for at least the better part of 3 years now. And I don't expect it to, suddenly, you know, manifest itself back into the good books. There's a lot of stuff going on in that region that it's very much obfuscated, like whether it's government or policy or economics. You know, we've talked about Japan an awful lot on this show and the way that they do their monetary policy. And we've talked about obviously the Taiwanese risk associated with US war policy and US hegemony, and can the US protect, you know, Taiwan? Do they want to? And chip manufacturing, as you mentioned, among other things that goes on in that region of the world. There's so many things hinging on that one little area. And like instead on TV, we see Jim Cramer talking about whether Bitcoin is going to find a bottom at 40,000 or 35,000. Like to me, there's no excuse not to report on this stuff. And you're right, it should be a bigger story. I just don't know what else we can say about it. Like we don't have any, obviously you and me don't have any, like, you know, insights into this, but
Well, if you look politically down south, mm-hmm. the guy there that's in charge, does he have the backbone to go ahead and say we're going to try
no.
to?
Oh my god!
Right,
no.
It's the guy that potentially may replace him. Well, you know who it is, right? So
PJT, yeah.
Considering if he does ever get in, being on his last term because he can't run again, he go balls to the wall to try to fuck them up, not fuck them up, but to try to attract as much business as possible from there to, I guess, U.S. soil. I think there's a good opportunity here. It shouldn't be overlooked. I'm not sure exactly how to execute it. And even if you can't execute, I'm not sure if it's going to be, in the grand scheme of things, it's going to be for the best. But I'm looking at that, and it's like they're not doing well, and they're probably not going to do well moving forward. And there may be some unrest, and it's going to impact their ability to produce goods. Mm-hmm. We have industry set up here. We, like I said before, with respect to Canada, you know, the United, same applies to the United States. We have a stable environment, politically stable environment. The banks are politically sound compared to the rest of the world. An mm-hmm. educated population. We're willing to work. There's lots going for us and U.S. We should take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And this may be an opportunity to do it.
We'll see. But we don't often take advantage of opportunities, unfortunately. So yeah. Not a lot of high hopes over here.
Well, you're mentioning a conflict over there. Now, we could talk about conflict in Yemen, and sure. because we have the Houthis over there. And Washington Post, they wrote a piece that the U.S. is preparing itself to sustain a military campaign over there against Unreal. The Houthis. So, and the timing of this is interesting because it looks like they're going to be wrapping up whatever campaign they have in Eastern Europe. So wrap that up, start this one. And it's just like, you're not increasing the amount of conflict you have. You're shifting resources from one area to another. And officials are predicting this won't be something that will be dragged out for years. I repeat this. Officials are predicting this is something that won't be dragged out for years. Do you believe that's the case?
Oh, good.
Given history, no. But this is something that could get interesting, too, because the Houthis are saying that they're going to... Well, that's saying there's a thought that they may start targeting Saudi oil fields in retaliation for all this.
Yeah.
That would certainly throw a monkey wrench into a lot of things. Mostly would be the cost of oil, which if there's a spike, well, it's going to impact the economy tremendously. And also what's happening over there is because there's that conflict going on, nobody's using or they're trying to dissuade people from using those waters. And it's going to make the cost of shipping goods even more expensive because you're going to be avoiding using the Suez Canal. And avoiding that, it just makes everything more costly, time and in terms of fuel. So this is something that's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And you know what? Iran is involved here. And for sure, China is involved here. Ah, man, it's just, you look at this and it's like, just when we thought we're going to wrap up the war in Eastern Europe and we're going to start to get to a more normalized environment, here we go, another conflict, and it's just going to be another drain on the U.S. economy.
How the fuck did the U.S. get away with bombing the shit out of Yemen without a proper vote?
I don't know. I haven't followed that. Bombed the shit out of them?
They bombed the shit out of them. Large-scale bombing operation, them in the U.K. or Britain. What do you call those people?
Whatever. I'm good with the U.K.
Like,
how long has that been going on for?
Like 3 days or something, 2 days or something, like a while. How the fuck is that allowed? These guys are just like, Pelosi wakes up one morning when she's done on the terminal. Okay, she's done putting in her fucking leverage futures trades for the day. She heads to work and just decides they're going to bomb the shit out of some country halfway around the world. What the fuck is going on? Last gasps of the empire, man. Okay, I'm telling you, they are spread thin. I don't want to jump the shark here, but this is like semi breaking news from 5:12 p.m. today. I just saw it on Zero Hedge. The SDR is going to start a bond offering through the World Bank. Remember we talked about SDR, special deposit rights?
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years ago. You're going to be able to buy SDR bonds now?
Is this the first time? I'm not sure that it ever offered this before. I'm not familiar with it.
I don't know, but I can't wait to look more into this. Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. Maybe next week we'll talk about it if it becomes a story. But it's very interesting that these guys are like,
you know, we should get these finding new special debt rights vehicles on a CBP balance sheet. Let's do that.
You want to buy some SDRs?
That'd be fucking a joke. Let's do one. Let's find one. Let's see if we can get one.
We gotta see what it costs. Steal. If anyone knows anyone at the World Bank who will sell us an SDR, let me know. On secondary, we'll pay secondary for
it. But I want it in paper format, so when I wet my ass, I have something to use.
No, put it behind me. What do you mean? So, okay. So the Houthi thing, yeah. I mean, look, the thing that no one talks about, and this is kind of in the same vein as China, as far as like, you know, reliance on other countries and their goods and their services. The shipping thing is insane. Have you seen the reroute maps? If you can't use that sort of one waterway, it adds like
down South Africa.
Yeah. It adds like 4 or 5 days or something like that on either end of the, crazy.
The cost of
like
fuel, that, and it, you're beating up the ship even more.
Len, global warming, Len. What about that? I think I thought this was completely unfathomable, right? Like, come on, man, put your green hat on. Be one with nature.
Did you hear one thing about, I don't want to totally derail this, but there was a theory that they're going to talk about global warming is going to cause the ice in Russia and Northeast Russia to melt. And that's going to release some bacteria and viruses that have been frozen.
Holy fuck.
They're going to use that.
Where did you, what YouTube, how late was this after the high hash rate podcast? What's going on over here?
I'll share this with you. But yeah, come on. Anything is possible these days. They could use whatever they want to justify whatever they want to do. And they could say, no, we don't want to increase, or we don't want to institute some old and dormant virus back into the wild and whatever.
We are truly just living in clown world. What else we got? What's next?
Well, student loan forgiveness.
Oh, perfect. Good.
Yeah. Because on January 21st, 2024, the government of the United States, they extended an olive branch to some people, not a lot of people, to some people carrying student loan debts. And they approved $4.9 billion in additional student relief for 73,600 borrowers. And of that breakdown, 43,000 borrowers are under the public service loan forgiveness. So those are people that are teachers, nurses, firefighters, and other individuals that are working for the public service and for doing so for 10 years. I don't know. I mean, I look at this. They're the majority of the people that are getting benefits from this. If I were a taxpayer, I'd be pissed if I didn't have a student loan, right? Because I'm watching people with student loans get it forgiven. Then if I was a taxpayer that had student loans that wasn't included on this list, I'd be pissed as well.
Yes, sir.
So really, it's only a select few that are getting the pat on the back. So who is this helping in the end? You're pissing off a large portion of the population, including people that do have student loans right now, because they're not getting it refunded or getting it relieved. So what the fuck? Like, what is this all about? Why are they doing this? I don't know, man. It's an election year. We're going to see more of this shit moving forward. There's no way they're going to stop this, but it's just money they're pissing away. And it's not like it's being relieved. It's being collectively given to everybody's taking on their shoulders, right? You know, debt just doesn't disappear. It just gets redistributed and everybody's fucking taking it on.
No, we'll share it.
Yeah. And it's not like it's ever going to get paid off. It's just there forever. Added on to the fucking debt, the $34 trillion debt, and this is only just a few billion dollars. It's a small drop in a bucket, but small drop in a bucket here, small drop in a bucket here. You got another bucket to fill that's filled up. And I don't know. It's fucking...
Just give your head a shake, man. I was watching Gunlock the other day. Double Line did an hour and a half release that I have to watch again. Actually, I wanted to watch it today, but I didn't have time. And Gunlock, you know, to the point that you're making about debt forgiveness, he's basically saying that indebtedness is causing problems all over America and all over the modern world now in a way that it hasn't before. And governments, for the first time, are having to deal with this before consumers do. Isn't that weird? The consumer doesn't seem to care about debt at all. They're taking more credit card debt, more lines of credit, having debt forgiven. They're spending money like drunken sailors. They're not working. They don't give a flying fuck about their finances. Maybe for the first time in the last 50 years. Governments are the ones who are now having to worry about their debt payments, really giving a little bit of credence to that saying, right? 50 million in debt is someone else's problem. 50 in debt is my problem, right? He's kind of seeing that now at the government level, the state level. And once the sovereigns start to go down as far as debt burden, there's really nothing on top of that, right? So is this just like the first forgiveness on the way to many other forgiveness programs? Like, when are they going to forgive, I don't
mortgages,
know.
Mortgages, credit cards.
Do I have my mortgage? Yeah, but forgive my mortgage. Come on. What's the holdup?
Yeah.
I mean, they're already really doing it. Like, pretty soon I'll be able to get a mortgage payment out of the couch cushions because inflation will be so bad. But, you know, the other thing is, go ahead.
The only difference is because these are federal student loans that if you're talking about a mortgage, they're
rolled up
to the government, but here's the dotted line there.
Here's the thing, okay? These porous walls between different buckets and envelopes of spending, funding, debt, and deficit, they don't fucking mean anything. They're nonsense. It doesn't mean anything at all. None of the numbers mean anything. They're all made up and they're all worthless. The thing I like the most about this is that they're trying to combat inflation, and they're just giving money to the people who will for sure spend it the most irresponsibly, for sure contribute the most to inflation, and for sure not use any of the savings to better their situation because they're stupid. I really believe that. I've taken some shit for that on the show. But the fact of the matter is, if you got all that debt from a student, from a diploma program or a certificate program or a BA or something, and you couldn't find a job, chances are you haven't gotten that much smarter in the last 4 or 5 years or 10 years working as a teacher, public servant, firefighter, whatever. It sucks, but you shouldn't, if you need the loan forgiveness 10 or 15 years later, you know, I doubt very much you're going to have the wherewithal to really do something with that money to better your situation. I can't stress this enough. If you keep feeding the pigeons will keep coming back for food. You're throwing a lot of breadcrumbs out here, Len. And it's starting to get pretty busy by the park bench that is the federal government coffers. And pretty soon you're going to run out of breadcrumbs to throw, and the pigeons are still going to be there squawking, pecking away. And this is how things like this get out of hand, right?
Pigeon makes good meals. So you look at it from a different point of view. You track the pigeons and you use them as a meal.
There we go. Cook them up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be like that bag lady in Home Alone 2 feeding pigeons all day in the park.
I never watched Home Alone 2.
Are you fucking kidding? What? You've never seen Home Alone?
No. That or Home Alone 3. I've seen the first one.
This guy's out here playing in NHL 94 emulator leagues. You didn't have an hour for Home Alone 2 in the last 30 years?
And I'm not going to dedicate an hour for that.
Oh, my God. What? Len, that's an all-time great movie.
Home Alone 2?
Oh, yeah. All-time great. All-time great movie.
How dumb are you to leave the kid behind again?
I don't like any movies. That's an all-time great. You got to watch
Goodfellas. You don't like fucking Goodfellas?
I love Goodfellas. Good movie. All-time too. Pulp Fiction's amazing.
These are fucking great movies. So a lot of people are like,
have you seen Raging Bull? Have you seen Taxi Driver? Like, no, I haven't seen them. They're probably fine, but I haven't seen them. No. But like Home Alone 2 is so good, man. Great family fun. Sabrina would love that movie.
She's seen the first one, and I don't think she has any desire to watch it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Jeez. Let's move on. We'll talk about some Clown World North.
Love it.
And yeah, with the decay in society.
Where should we start? Can we start with the sex worker girl on Reddit? Can we start with her?
Do it.
I got to find the tweet here. I'll share it. I found this on Reddit. It was in Poverty Finance or something like that.
Yeah, the Poverty Finance Canada. Is that what it is?
I don't know.
Is there a subreddit that's top 50, I think, in finance? Poverty Finance Canada. So some woman, she's down
from Ontario Works. Oh my God. Wow. That's even worse. Jeez, that's
down on her luck, not making all that much money. And so she decided to get into the oldest business out there.
Oh no, she did indeed. I'm looking for the post here. I'm going to share it. Let's make sure there's no identifiers on the screen. No, there's not. Except that I've been visiting the Project Diablo 2 subreddit.
Diablo 2?
Oh yeah, buddy.
Holy fuck, that's
throwback. I know.
Late 90s there.
Okay, so look, I turned to prostitution after months of living on nothing because my rent for a room was $700. This is crazy to me, man. One day walking near a plaza, listening to a sad playlist, moping and crying as I always do, I walk into a massage parlor. I walk in, ask the receptionist if they had any jobs for cleaner or receptionist, but she said I'm pretty and I'll do well here. Now she's, fast forward a few months, I've moved into my own apartment, saving cash flow for school, blah, blah, blah. What am I to make of this? I'm told constantly, Len, that here in Ontario and Canada, and I'm sure Americans are said the same, like they're told the same thing, they're fed the same fucking pile of bullshit, that I have to pay more in tax to support my fellow Canadians and that we're all kind of quote unquote in this together. And if I don't pay the level of tax that I do, then I won't be able to support programs like this and help people get on their feet. As far as I can tell, there's more Canadians than ever paying more taxes than ever for programs like this. And this girl's still giving hand jobs for rent. So what am I missing here? we made fun of that story maybe a month ago or 2 months ago from The Economist, maybe, or some other horseshit publication, dog shit rag, that Canada was the best place or most livable place in the world. It's only livable, I guess, if you are stroking strangers at the parlor a couple times a week. Is that it? You can only have an apartment if you're willing to, you know, play the skin flute for a guy you don't know once or twice here and there, right? When your kids and your husband are busy, unfucking believable. We should be ashamed of this. And I'm not taking a shot at this woman, okay? She's doing something that she's decided is the best option for her. It is not a good option. I don't want to hear any morons telling me sex work is work. No one's arguing that it's work, dummy. But to pretend that this is like a choice that any sane person would make if they had any other alternative is wrong. We shouldn't be okay with stuff like this here. This is completely, completely insane that this person who is on a government support program that is meant to help people get back on their feet or stay on their feet or help them through a tough time, get them through a rough patch, she's jerking people off.
Because those programs, they don't pay enough.
They don't pay shit.
Reality.
Housing's out of control. Food's out of control. Power's out of control. Everything's out of control. Childcare, forget about it.
It's not like this person is driving a Mercedes. Like,
yeah.
She's probably struggling to get by and unfortunately needs to do this in order to make ends meet. So because, those programs, while they exist and they're very costly for everybody to pay into and for the government to administer, they don't pay enough for people to sustain themselves. And we're talking just a basic lifestyle here. I'm not talking about buying an iPhone and shit like that.
No, absolutely not. And this, like every comment here, sex work is work. These people are completely lost. They're completely out to lunch. But
because the reality is they're not in that position. If the tables were turned and you're collecting because circumstances, you're not able to work, and you're collecting the money from ODSP or whatever, how the fuck could you live?
I know.
And if you're in those shoes, what are you going to do? I don't know. It's sad.
Yeah, it's terrible. And this should be like something that you see on the news, honestly. But because the news is bought and paid for, you don't see stories like this very often. Like, talk about human interest. Maybe instead of constantly reporting on arsons and new builds, you could report on this next week, CTV.
The arsons are getting to be a real problem for new builds.
Right? Only going to get worse. Only going to get worse.
And what happens in the end, the insurance that everybody's paying is going to
goes up.
You're going to go up. It's just the cycle continues.
And it's unbelievable, man. Anyway.
The decay of society is also being reported by CBC. Mm. And we've heard about a lot of stories about vehicles being stolen. Right? Like it seems like I get this once a day on my Twitter feed, and I'm not trying to read into this. It's just feeding me to it. And it's always, a nice truck or something stolen. Anyways, one guy out there had his second truck stolen from him. First one gone. So he learned from his lesson from the first one, and he decided, you know what, I'm going to buy some air tags and attach it to this truck, because if it gets stolen, then I can at least track it and get it.
Okay.
So what happened? It got stolen. Air tags were there. He was able to locate it, and he was able to informed the police, and he did so for days, but nothing was done. What happened in the end? The truck ended up going on a freighter, shipped to the UAE, and then ultimately he tracked it down. It was at some lot, some used car lot, and it was for sale on some used car website in the UAE. So this is shit you see. Someone, again, who's going to pay for this? It's the premiums are going to go up, right? Because this isn't free, his replacement truck. It's going to have to be paid by somehow. All of us are going to pay for it. So you hear shit like this. Cars and trucks, especially ones that are decent, like, they've always been desirable assets, but now it's going to be even more desirable because it's going to be a quick score that you can make some really good money and sell it on the secondhand market. And in fact, it could be just sent overseas or even chopped for parts. That's another option. So yeah, that's why if you can drive your winter beater and make that a year-round beater, it's probably the best thing you should do. The summer beater, the spring beater.
I mean, tell me what, like, if you got the air tags of the car, like, you know where the car is. You tell the police where the car is. They don't show up. What are you supposed to do?
There's nothing. It's not like you're going to go.
There's nothing you can do. You're not going to go there and, go full Bruce Willis on the guy, yippee-ki-yay to get your truck back. But should you have to pay the higher insurance the next vehicle you get? Like, I did my part.
If he doesn't, we all do.
I know, but right? Like it's just ridiculous, man. It is ridiculous. Where's the story from, by the way? Toronto, I take it.
You know what?
It's Montreal, Ontario? Probably.
No, it was Ontario, but I don't know exactly where. Sorry, I didn't get that specific.
I've heard stories locally here, vis-a-vis like just friends of mine, you know, friend of a friend type stuff, where AirTags have been used to find cars a day or 2 days after they're stolen. What they do in this area, not Dundas, this kind of stuff. There's no crime in Dundas, so don't worry about that. But in Hamilton, okay, outside the valley, outside the bubble here, what they do, Len, is they steal the car and they park it, you know, a kilometer, 2 kilometers away, 3 kilometers away, somewhere where it's kind of out of sight for 4 or 5 days, just to make sure no one comes to get it. Then they start moving the stuff out to port. There was a story today in some Canadian publication, it might have been CBC or CTV, I forget, that they did arrest 11 people in a car theft and shipping ring that had been going for some time. Seems to me that you need to arrest more than 11 people, like the number of stories you see about stolen cars all over the place.
Letting in tens, hundreds of thousands of student visas, student visas. So if even 1% of those convert into this, then you'll never be able to. Those 11 people, well, now you have several hundred to deal with.
Completely insane, man. Completely insane. Maybe we should get into car thefts, like Gone in 60 Seconds CBP edition. What do you think?
Let's do it.
We'll just listen to the writer and go like this, like Nick Cage. Let's go. Let's go.
If I could find that 1999 beige Corolla, I'm fucking all over it, man. That's mine.
Four door.
Can't go wrong with a beige Corolla. Did you hear about this is a National Bank report. I'm sure you must have seen this. They were talking about a population trap. You heard about this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for people who are not aware, it's a situation where no increase in living standards is possible because the population is growing so fast that all available savings are needed to maintain the existing capital labor ratio. And if you look at the GDP per capita and kind of use this as a guide, I mean, maybe there's some truth here. And sadly, though, this population trap, it's noted that it's generally reserved for third world countries. Imagine that.
Hey, how close are we? Are we close?
On the books, we're very far away, but in reality. So yeah, that's a pretty damning statement by the National Bank. So a population trap, we're stuck in it. And it's probably going to be like this for several years. Let's be honest. We're not going to get out of it.
I have to say one thing I'm going to start reading more of in the coming months are these bank economic report letters that get put out every so often. Because sometimes I think you and me are funny. Like we come up with these little quips and we point to data and we laugh and have kind of a minute of humor about just the state of affairs and the downward spiral we find ourselves in. But the banks, Len, they do it all the time and they pull no punches. Like they compare, like you just mentioned, they compare us to the third world. They talk about how poor the policy decisions were, how easy it was to see some of this stuff coming, how warnings were ignored over and over again by Ottawa. It's like, you know, It's hard to argue with the banks because banks are some of the biggest beneficiaries of policies that would otherwise bankrupt normal people, but enrich the folks in their walls and in the banking sector. And for them to come out against policies like this and decisions that have been made in the past and tell you about, you know, the cost of living and how, you know, in this case, your standard of living is just never going to go up because of X, Y, Z. They've talked about in the last week or 2 weeks, there was another one that came out, maybe it wasn't 2 weeks ago, maybe it was a little longer, going into some detail about stagflation and how Canada has basically been in stagflation for the better part of like 3 or 4 years now, depending on how you measure. And they talk about GDP per capita and all these things that we've kind of been, you know, touching on for the last year or so. I guess they're reading more of these letters because this is a lot of good information that people are missing out on. And again, you're never going to see this on like, you know, CTV. W5 is never going to go to National Bank and do a, you know, inquiry and discussion with the people who are writing these letters and find out, wow, how much this is true. Is this why like I can't buy a car or a house and I have to, you know, give handies on the side? Is this part of the problem? But they should, because it is. And it's going to become harder and harder to hide as time goes on, isn't it? I'm looking forward to seeing more of these letters. I hope that they start getting like Larry David to contribute to them, because I think if I could get like that style of comedy plus the economic data, I'd be just like sitting pretty.
Aren't they quarterly or something along those lines?
They are, but sometimes they sprinkle a few more in. So like, you know, the Looney Hour talks about them quite a bit, and it feels to me like they're t- talking about them more often than quarterly, but maybe there's like another variety of a similar letter that's not quite the same. Like the, I could imagine if like the forecasts were quarterly, but I think there's like some other just like short comments that are a little more frequent.
You think they have the guy from running the Franklin Simpleton account doing?
Yeah, he just goes bank to bank. He goes bank to bank. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for him. So everybody has seen this, I guess, and that's following in Canada. We have the student visa situation that's going on, and there it looks like they're going to put a cap, a hard cap on student visas that are going to be moving forward for the next 2 years. You've seen this, right? So I'm sure you've seen this.
Yeah, I don't buy it, Len. I think it's fucking bullshit.
Well, there's a lot more to it. Like, I'll just give you a quick rundown. Number one, so they're going to be 35%. It's going to be the decrease for 2024. So the number will be 364,000, a decrease of 35%. So that's a significant percentage, but in terms of overall numbers, 364,000 is still a significant number. That's number one. Number two, they're also going to be letting in between 70 and 90,000 Ukrainians before March 31st. Now, I know this is not student visas. It's something else. So you're going to be reducing the amount of student visas, but still increasing or still letting in a significant number of Ukrainians in just a very short period of time before March 31st. So in the end, you're still going to have the housing situation is very difficult to deal with right now. This is not going to really help it that much. You still don't have enough supply out there, new builds out there to accommodate all the people that are going to be coming in for the next 2 years. So a lot of people that are talking about landlords that are going to feel the impact moving forward, I don't think so. There's going to be still a huge demand on housing, and it's not going to change for the next little while.
No.
So I'm looking at that. That's the second thing. And the last thing, somebody did a tweet today, and this is kind of on the same topic. And he was talking about the median total income for immigrants after 10 years after being admitted into Canada. And an economic immigrant, this is after 10 years, is earning, this is the median, by the way, $56,000 annually. And other immigrants are earning $33,700 per year. That's not a lot after 10 years of being here.
No.
And then spouses are the same thing, $33,000. Refugees are making $30,800 after 10 years.
Their dependents become your dependents at that income level, right?
It becomes everybody's, because they're saying 24% of all refugees still have social assistance 10 years after that, 10 years after being here. But also almost 20% of other immigrants are also doing this as well. They're on social assistance as well. So yeah, I just wanted to put this in to add some flavor to this story. And yeah, the reduction in study permits, sure, 35% is going to be done for this year, and it's the next 2 years are going to be doing this, but the people are already here. Yeah, they're going to be, you know, doing their thing. They need somewhere to live. Some cases they're going to be going to shelters or even under bridges, which is very sad, but that's the reality. If there's not enough supply out there to meet the demand, they got to do something. They're human beings. They got to sleep somewhere. And where it is, well, it could be anywhere.
Yeah. Regarding the cap on foreign visas, I think that's political spin. And I think that what's actually happened is, if you look at some of the data around applications over the last year or so, they've basically been cut in half from places like India and other, you know, popular emigration spots to Canada. I think that what we're actually seeing here is the Fed saying, yeah, we're going to do the responsible thing and cap this and try and prevent, you know, what's become a hot button issue from becoming a lot hotter. But in reality, what's happened are these people are smartening up. They're saying, I can't do anything with this country the way that I've been sold, or the way that the bill of goods was sold to me. It's just not accurate. I'm not being sold the same thing as when I get here. You see this, by the way, on some of the subreddits about Canadian immigration. To your point about the data regarding the number of people who are on social assistance or other social welfare programs after a decade, the median income, stuff like that. A lot of these people saying the same thing, that look, you know, no matter how much support I get, I still can't make it. And I was able to get my education here and still I can't afford to live. I'm planning on going back to India. I'm planning on going to the States, planning on going to XYZ country. This is a big problem, because we as a country have such a low birth rate that, yeah, we need some level of immigration, competent, contributing immigration. They can't afford to live here anymore, so they stop coming. Okay. Well, we can't afford to have kids over here, so the birth rate is extremely low. where does the fix for pensions and whatnot come from? I've mentioned this on the show before. There's only three people working now for every one pensioner. There used to be seven. Pensioners are living longer. They're enjoying a higher quality of life. And there's going to be more of them, you know, over the next 10 or 20 years than there ever has been before. There is a real chance. I've said this before. There is a real chance that I could be retired and collecting a pension while my father is also retired and collecting a pension. Like there's probably a lot of people in that situation. And I don't know how we fix that if we can't even convince, you know, survival level immigrants to come here and contribute to the pot. I hate to describe them in those terms, by the way, because like you said, they're humans and they're doing the thing that makes the most sense for them, or so they thought. And they're coming here and finding it's a different story, right? The reality is much more grim. It's living under a bridge, like you said, or living in a shelter, or you know, whatever. Not good. It's not good. It's just not good. And I'll just leave it there. We could go deeper on that, but you know, we don't have to. You guys can figure it out for yourselves.
Now, credit card debt is another topic we should talk about, because StatsCan came out with some information showing that Canadians now owe $104 billion in total in credit card debt. I'm wondering if that's just individuals or even including business credit cards, because let's be honest, there are some businesses that have credit cards. I'm not sure if that's captured in this stat, but either way, $104 billion in credit card debt, considering Canada brings in around $400 to $500 billion in total for revenue, this is a significant portion of what we're dealing with. But if you break it down further, and if you divide this by all the adults in Canada, we're talking, this is a little over $3,000 of credit card debt per adult. And it's not a lot if you think about that in that respect, but also to go a little bit deeper, how many people out there, they're using their credit card and paying that off in totality at the end of the month? Mm-hmm. So essentially they're carrying $0 from month to month. So that means that there are probably many other people that are having $5,000, $6,000, $10,000, $20,000, maybe more of credit card they're carrying month to month. And there's no way out of this. So those are the ones that are going to be, they are feeling the impact of the high interest rate environment we're in right now. The interest rates, I took a look at credit cards. They're right now anywhere between 10 and 25%. Wow. 10 or I guess are introductory offer ones. Maybe some could go as high as 30%. I haven't seen any yet.
What is your credit? I don't even know what my credit card interest rate is. Do you know what yours is? Yeah, I don't know either. I have no idea.
If I were to guess, I'll guess between 19 and 22%. Because
that's what I figure too, but that's probably old thinking by you and I. It's probably actually higher than that now.
So when I look at credit cards, when I just took a look at it, I was looking at anywhere between 10 and 25%. And I couldn't find anything higher than 25% that's being offered. I mean, I guess maybe that is it's possible to get it. I don't know. But either way, interest rates are significantly higher than
they were. I should get my credit card and find out. Let's see here. So
Boom Dust is saying between 20 and 25%. So yeah, that's, I guess, the fat middle of what people are paying in terms of credit card rates.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to get at is, if people are carrying, and they probably are carrying based on the statistic, thousands and thousands, in some cases tens of thousands, on their credit card debt, what happens moving forward? Like, this is something that is going to eventually, people are going to go bankrupt, and then who is going to be responsible for it? Well, collectively, we all are going to be responsible for it. And it's not going to get any better. And as the price of things go up and people are funding lifestyle through credit cards, or they're not making the choices to reduce the amount of expenses. In some cases, I don't mean to lambaste people, but let's be honest, there are still some people living like it's credit is cheap. And
why shouldn't they though? Why shouldn't they? Like, this is the point I was making earlier about like the bailouts that just seem to keep coming, or debt that gets inflated away. There's no reason not to, right? Like, I sometimes feel stupid for not doing this, honest to God. And I talked about this with someone who's like a friend of the show, I won't say who, but about how people seem to be living so high on the hog, even though you know that they don't make that much money. And like, it's clear they're doing it on debt. And it's clear that in normal times, that would be a bad idea. But just, it hasn't been a bad idea for so long now, Len. Like, whenever something goes wrong, they just fucking give you money or inflate the debt away. Like, it just keeps happening. Like, maybe are we the dumb ones? I don't know.
Maybe anyway, we are. I'll play devil's advocate here. It precludes you from actually buying desirable assets moving forward. And desirable assets could be diamonds, could be gold, could be Bitcoin, yeah. could be a house, because you are going to be constantly paying the minimum balance on your credit card, or else something is obviously going to happen as a result of that. And you're not being able to scroll away that money into something like Bitcoin or any other desirable assets I mentioned. So I don't know. Maybe in a short term, it's weird to dumbasses for doing it. But in the long run, I think, I could be wrong, is that we're able to parlay these desirable assets into something bigger and better later on. You know, it's, you have a house, it's a magnificent thing to have as long as you're able to sell it. But if the time comes where you're not able to sell it and take the proceeds from that and do something with it, then, well, you got rugged. But
yeah,
until that day, I'm a proponent of having these desirable assets.
I'm with you, man. Like I just said to my wife, I'll tell you what my stupid purchase was for the last little while in case you don't listen to Two Whites and a Blue. Like I said, I started playing quarterback for a team this year and I wanted to buy a proper leather football. They're fucking expensive. And so I bought.
How expensive was it?
$150.
That's in the grand scheme of things.
That's fucking insane to buy a football for $150. I've never done something like that. It should last forever. Should never have to replace it. Yeah, should never have to replace it. But the point is like for you and me to think like this, it's amazing. Like to consider how the other side lives is almost unfathomable. You know, if that's the way that you and me think and people who listen to and watch this show think, it's almost unfathomable to imagine how the other side lives. Right. And the problem with that is that, not to like get into the weeds a little bit here and like get esoteric, but how can you share a country with people who don't at all consider the same things, you know, when it comes to like principles of living a quality life? How can you possibly go to the ballot box and cast a vote against that other person? Like, what, you're just never going to agree on fucking anything, man, on anything. How do you sustain a country like that? How do you do it?
I have no answer to that. It's impossible to do
it's
so.
It's impossible.
You're continually, as a country, you have to continually get into debt as you bail people out and provide them with assistance to meet their daily obligations. And then that further devalues the currency. You have to increase taxation. People continually suffer, and just it spirals out of control.
Yeah. I just don't know what to make of all this. Like, it's clear that there's a problem here. And like, there's a very, very, very clear and obvious and troubling division of ethos between, like, I won't even say Bitcoiners, because I mean, like, you and me were probably like this before Bitcoin. Like, I've never been a big like debt carrier. I don't do extravagant purchases. You know, my wife and I don't fucking spend a bunch of money on shit we don't need all the time. You know, case in point, you and me did this show for 2 years before we bought fucking proper microphones and cameras, right? Like, I think you're still using a webcam, are you not?
I'm using a camera that was gifted to me.
Whatever. You know what I mean?
It works great. Like, it's a 1080.
Exactly. Yeah, we didn't spend any money on this show for 2 years or 2.5 years, basically until I moved. And like, I sometimes look around at like what I see from people who are like, not to point at content creators, but it's just something that I've become kind of familiar with over the last few years. People who start a show and are immediately buying like $5,000 cameras, $1,000 microphones, $1,000 soundboards, like, you know, all this shit, $1,000 lighting. Like, you're going to take on all this debt for what? Like, you don't even know if it's sustainable yet. You haven't built the business. You haven't done that. If you're doing that in other facets of your life, like every time you see a shiny new thing you think you're going to like, you buy it on debt. You shouldn't be rewarded for that. But like some of you guys saying in the chat, the same thing, you are rewarded for that kind of behavior. It's lauded in a lot of ways. And the feedback loop is get into debt. The debt stays static. Don't worry about it. It'll get inflated away and you can pay for your stupid fucking
debt. That is cheap.
I know.
Isn't it always cheap though?
Isn't it always cheap? Like the interest rate, I know there's like something to be said about the relationship between interest rates and inflation. I know this, but like at what level does the debt for consumers, do consumers finally wake up and are like, we got to stop fucking spending on retail stuff? Like Christmas was gangbusters this year. A lot of the data coming out, gangbusters. And even in January so far, you see like clothing sales are high. They usually crash in January. They're high still.
Numbers I've seen, it didn't eclipse, like, it's if you take into consideration inflation, it didn't eclipse 2022 Christmas.
Fair enough.
2023, it went up, but in reality, yeah, it's
nominal,
like,
terms raise, only.
But you, yeah. Sorry?
Nominal terms only.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you got a raise for, you know, you're making 100 grand, you got a raise for 3,000. You're like, yeah, I'm making more money. But the reality is, no, man, you're behind probably $7,000 in the end. So everybody put everything on, not everybody, a lot of people put their Christmas shopping on credit cards. And that's why the credit card debt goes up. So what I'm trying to say is, if you could secure debt long term, like in the United States, a 30-year mortgage at a cheap rate, when rates are like 0% or like 0.5%,
yeah, you do it.
That's a good opportunity. That's a good investment. That's a good buy, because you're locked in for a very long time at those cheap rates. We don't have that same type of ability here in Canada. You can get a 10-year, but you can't. I don't think you can get 30 years over here in Canada.
Taylor was telling me last week that the reason we can't do that is because the government doesn't have the credit facilities to borrow like that, like the US does.
Okay.
So yeah, I want to look more into that. Maybe he can explain it to me when he hears this. He can send me a message.
There's good debt. So if, like, in the United States, theoretically, if you you have a stable job, or at least you think you have a stable job, and you could buy that house for 30 years mortgage and for very, very cheap in terms of the interest rates. So that's a good buy. That's a good use of debt.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, going out and buying fucking sneakers with a credit card and not paying off that credit card at the end of the month and going to carry that balance month over month. Well, if you're not getting some budget sneakers, that's a bad fucking purchase. And you're just doing that, and in the end, you're going to get wrecked. But, you know, like, what the fuck do I know? I'm just some dude in the basement.
Yeah, that's a wrap for tonight, I think. Interesting content, as always, on the Clown World side. It's like a constant kind of stream of... It's a stream of, like, all the things that people are doing wrong, and then, like, you know, some weeks later, the problems that that's caused, and then some weeks after that, the government response. And, like, it's been like that for 2 years, right? Like, since we started doing the Clown World segment, maybe a year ago, or a year and a half ago now, you've kind of seen this pattern. And, you know, much the same way that we're amazed that it keeps happening, I'm also amazed that no one else seems to be learning either. Whether it's the people or the responders, no one seems to be kind of being able, they can't draw the line between the two occurrences.
Look at, going into the weeds here, looking at, say, a central bank, they increased the money supply significantly. A lot of central banks did this. And then it took them a couple of years before they decided to raise rates to deal with the inflation that was as a result. It didn't take a fucking rocket scientist to figure out putting all this money in the system is going to create inflation. It's going to make it's a reactionary move, which is done well after the fact. In the United States, for instance, they're waiting for official numbers to be at 9% inflation, which is very, very high. Reality is probably much, much higher. Another thing is the student visa thing. You know, it's all reactionary. They're reducing the amount of student visas that are going to be issued in 2024 and 2025. Mm-hmm. This is all reactionary due to what they see was done to issuing student visas to a whole bunch of people. Again, it didn't take a rocket science to figure out what's going to happen if you let in a whole bunch of people. It's going to eat up the available housing supply. It's going to create some problems for people trying to attend universities and colleges because, while there's more competition to get in, now you're just dealing with the impact of that after.
And it's unbelievable, man.
You know, a lot of this you could predict, and failing to do so leads you to do something.
It's almost like you only can't predict it if you've been trained in that, like, field of expertise. Like, economists couldn't predict it, and, like, immigration experts couldn't predict it, and, you know, infrastructure people couldn't predict it, but everyone else is looking at it from the outside. It's like the bell curve meme, right? Like, the guys in the middle at the 100 IQ screaming and crying Wojak, meanwhile the Jedi on one side and the, you know, dummy on the other side both get it right away. I don't know, and whatever.
The sad thing is, a lot of these knee-jerk reactions, not often, but sometimes they could be very, very impactful. Like, they're trying too much to try to fix it. Where if they just dealt with it initially and just dealt with it the way they should, then it would have been, people wouldn't feel the impact too much. Like, for example, with flooding the market with M2 and increasing the money supply, the amount of money that's in the system. If they increase the rates shortly thereafter, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, then you wouldn't have 5% or 4% interest rates. You probably would have 3% interest rates, and then people wouldn't be as wrecked with their mortgages and credit cards and shit like that. If they were just able to think out long term and think, gee, we do this, there's going to be a reaction, and this is going to be a reaction. And why is there going to be a reaction? Well, because there's history to prove that this is happening. Fuck, they didn't do that. They were just saying money is going to remain cheap for a very, very long time. And then a few months later, they said, oh, fuck, we fucked up. Money's not going to be cheap for a very long time, and it's going to cost you with your debt. Like, the fuck, man? Like, you guys went to school for this. You guys are in a position to try to help people, but you guys fucked up royally as a result.
Yeah, it was like everyone's first rodeo. It was a fucking bad situation. Anyway, it's good for us. Good content. So thanks for coming, everyone. Great chat tonight, as always. That, you know, really means a lot to Len and I. You guys spend your Monday nights here. We do it because, you know, we've promised that we do it. So, but for you guys to come and do it every week, it's flattering. So this week, Hrvoje Morić, 12 o'clock till 1 o'clock on Wednesday. I might just stream it, save myself the trouble putting it up on YouTube later on. So if you guys have time to watch, I'd appreciate that. And yeah, that's it. Until then, take care of yourselves and don't do anything we wouldn't do, I guess. Don't buy a $200 football, $150 football. That's for sure.
Don't be a cuck or attend any Peter McCormack events.
't forget, everybody, lots of other stuff on CBP Media Network, including Two Whites and a Blue, me, Joey, my brother-in-law, Mike, and our friend Will talk about all the problems millennials are having with finance, romance, and just getting by. If you like CBP, if you like the NHL 94 podcast, I guarantee you'll like that one. Search for it, Two Whites and a Blue, anywhere you get your podcasts. We look forward to seeing you.